Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest in the OIES podcast series. This is the fifth podcast we're doing on the impact on energy markets of the Russia-Ukraine crisis. And with me today, May the 3rd, I have with me live from the Flame Conference in Amsterdam, my colleagues Mike Fullwood and Jack Sharples, and we'll be discussing gas markets again and what's been going on over the last 7 days or so. And I think the most important thing that we've seen in the last 7 days or so is the Russian decision to cut off gas supply to Poland and Bulgaria. So, Jack, let me come to you first, and let's start in Northwest Europe with Poland. What's been the immediate reaction to that shut off, both in terms of, you know, what the Poles have been up to, but also flows more generally in Northwest Europe?
The first point to make is that PGNiG's gas supply contract with Gazprom was due to expire at the end of 2022 in any case. So what this has done is basically brought forward the impact of the cessation of those flows. Now, Poland was receiving about 30 million cubic meters a day net via Belarus and Ukraine. Obviously, that has now stopped. And what we've seen in the immediate impact is that Poland is now physically importing that same volume from Germany. So the Yamal Europe pipeline operating in a west to east fashion. So obviously that's providing a bit more of a draw on gas flowing into Northwest Europe.
Okay, so Mike, we're seeing a kind of loss of volume, obviously, into Poland. What have we seen in terms of the reaction from sort of other sources of imports, both pipe and LNG?
Well, the LNG has been pretty much sort of set in stone coming into Europe over the last few months. I mean, certainly all the regas capacity into Northwest Europe is pretty much booked out and pretty much flowing at very high levels. UK also, you know, very high levels we've seen. I think in April, flows into the EU plus the UK were at record levels, higher than January. Europe as a whole, including Turkey, they were slightly down in January as Turkey had quite large volumes in January. So we have seen a lot of LNG coming to the Northwest European terminals as well as Spain and the US. For Europe as a whole, we've reached the 15 BCM increase year on year for Europe as a whole. It's slightly less than the EU as sort of 3 BCM that increase was into the UK. So we're seeing LNG flowing in at sort of record levels and obviously, you know, Jack might talk about imports from Norway, who are also pretty much sort of flat out into Northwest Europe, aren't they?
Yeah, so we've effectively not really got any wiggle room in Northwest Europe. Nord Stream's at full capacity, Norwegian pipeline flows are at full capacity, LNG is at record levels, regas capacity is pretty full. And so if we were to lose supply via Nord Stream, then Northwest Europe wouldn't really have any alternative supply options. And I think the fact that everything is operating flat out is reflecting in some of the prices here as well. So we're seeing not only NBP becoming discounted to TTF, but as a major topic of conversation here at Flame, is the discount of LNG to TTF in Northwest Europe as well, as sellers basically compete to try and get their cargoes into the regas terminals.
And Mike, could you kind of follow up on that a little bit more? These discounts, these kind of market anomalies, this is just a reflection of the fact that actually there's so much gas trying to flow into Northwest Europe, there's just not room for it all.
Well, that's what you've seen that in the States, you know, when there was a lack of takeaway capacity out of Marcellus to get it to, you know, south and sort of southwest, so huge discounts to Henry Hub. And we effectively, because there's not enough effectively infrastructure capacity, the amount of supply coming into the regas terminals, especially in the NBP discount to TTF, because you can't export more down the interconnector. And we're seeing these huge discounts, especially NBP TTF has been at a very big discount. I mean, there has been some constraints in the last week on export of gas down the interconnector to Belgium because of they're trying to clean some fluids out of the pipeline. But even before that, the back and exit capacity on BBL interconnector was, the flows are well above the actual nameplate exit capacity. So I think this is likely to continue until some of the constraints get removed in terms of, you know, maybe less LNG to come to Europe. There's no signs of that yet, but it's simply the infrastructure constraint is causing these huge discounts.
And I guess, Jack, you've alluded to this already, but the other implication is if more Russian gas disappeared from the market, there's really not much flexibility to bring more gas in from other sources, particularly into Northwest Europe. Is that right?
That's correct, yes. So even if prices were to go significantly above the current levels to try and attract additional flows, there would be no possibility of additional flows. So all that would happen is the response would be on the demand side. You'd see further demand destruction.
Well, I think, yes, if we go further out to the winter, but as we come into the low demand period, effectively what would take the main impact of further curtailments and lower flows would be in the storage build, because we're not going to be able to build storage as the EU target over the summer period. And then obviously we would struggle in the winter period. But it would depend if there were any further curtailments, let's say, because people weren't paying in rubles, which we'll come on to, then it depends on who it is and what the extent of it is.
Okay, so I mean, essentially, as you both mentioned in your research note of a few weeks ago, there's enough gas in storage and there's enough other supply to get Europe through the summer months. But then we get into winter with storage effectively empty, and then the problems really start in winter.
If there was a complete curtailment of Russian flows, I mean, I think that's a whole different ballgame from saying, you know, maybe another country, a small country, just doesn't pay in rubles and is cut off. The difference between that, you know, losing another 25, 30 million a day and losing sort of 250 million a day, there's a huge difference between those two outcomes.
No, indeed, absolutely. And essentially, it just puts more pressure on storage, as you say. Okay, well, look, that's Northwest Europe. Jack, let's talk about Bulgaria for a bit and what's going on in Southern Europe. So how did the Bulgarians react to having their contract terminated? And what impact has that had on flows in Southern Europe?
Well, I think to understand what's happening there, you need to understand the game of sort of pass the parcel that is played with gas in the region. So Bulgaria imports its Russian gas via Turkey. That's gas originally sourced from Turkstream. And then it delivers that gas on in very small volumes to North Macedonia, but in more substantial volumes to Greece, to the south, and then northward to Serbia, and then onward to Hungary. And actually, if we wind it back a few weeks, flows into Bulgaria from Turkey surged after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, but then declined with some fluctuations between late March and late April. And this was followed by a similar pattern in flows from Bulgaria to Greece. So clearly what was driving some of this fluctuation was actually Greek demand for Russian gas. Whilst, on the other hand, the flows onto to Serbia and then onto Hungary remained pretty flat and stable. So on the 27th of April, the flows from Turkey to Bulgaria dropped by about 90 gigawatt hours a day, but then recovered again on the 1st of May. What's interesting is that the flow from Bulgaria to Greece fell to zero on the 27th of April. So what could be happening actually is some kind of paper swap going on between Bulgaria and Greece, or Bulgaria basically importing, you know, taking some of the LNG volumes from Turkey and importing them across the border, where some of that capacity is available. But I do think it's very interesting to see the linkage, particularly between Bulgaria and Greece, in terms of what is happening there. And just as a side note, with that in mind, Greek LNG sendout did decline from mid-March onwards. So it could be that there's a seasonal decline in Greek gas demand, which is helping to ease some of this reactive game of pass the parcel of gas.
Okay, I mean, and the other sort of dynamic down in that region is the flows through the Ukraine. And we've sort of talked a bit about how those flows declined quite sharply in the last couple of weeks. But I think that they've recovered a little bit. Can you talk a bit about what's happening with the flows through Ukraine?
So in terms of what is flowing into Ukraine from Russia, so that's our best way of tracking what's happening relative to the transit contract. That transit contract is for 110 million cubic meters per day. And the flows from Russia into Ukraine were pretty constant and level at around that 110 until about the 7th of April, after which they began a decline and reached about half of that level, maybe even down to 50 million cubic meters a day on the 23rd of April. So that was the pre cut-off context, if you like. Now, a recent development is that in late April, those flows recovered to about 70 million cubic meters per day and then have jumped markedly at the beginning of May to just over 100 million cubic meters per day. Now, in terms of where that gas is going, the onward flows to Romania were pretty negligible to begin with, but those have now stopped. Clearly, the Romanians have got through the winter and don't need their rather small imports of Russian gas. The flows to Hungary were zero in any case. Hungary is now getting its Russian gas via Turkstream and Bulgaria and Serbia. So what we're seeing right now is a small flow of about 5 million cubic meters per day to Moldova. And the rest, the remaining 95 million cubic meters per day is going through to Slovakia. So what we effectively have in terms of Ukrainian transit now is a central corridor. Russian gas flows in the east of Ukraine. It flows out to Slovakia, from where it is delivered onto Austria and Italy.
Okay, so in terms of the risk profile, if you like, that kind of really increases if there is a cutoff, then obviously, again, to your earlier point, we do have a significant problem if that central corridor goes down.
Yes, absolutely. So then it becomes a question of, for example, for Italy, how much spare LNG regas capacity it has, how much spare capacity it has on the pipeline that enables them to import gas into northern Italy via Switzerland. But there's, again, not a lot of wiggle room.
Okay, well, I mean, one of the things of the wiggle room we've talked about in the past has been North African gas. So let's talk a little bit about imports from Algeria particularly. What can you tell me about what's been happening over the last couple of months there? Has there been an uptick in flows?
Well, I think, again, a bit of historical context is useful. So from North Africa, we have four pipelines going into southern Europe, two to Spain, two to Italy. One from Algeria to Spain is direct under the Mediterranean Sea, Medgas, but one of them was via Morocco. And as we've covered in plenty of OIS research in the latter part of last year, those flows have now stopped. There's no Moroccan transit. So basically, Algeria only has one pipeline to connect them to Spain. There is one pipeline from Algeria to Italy that's used substantially, and then a smaller pipeline for Libyan gas going to Italy. Now, in terms of those Algerian flows, the flows to Spain were pretty stable in February and March, and then they fluctuated a bit in April. The flows to Italy on the Transmed pipeline from Algeria were pretty stable since February. But an interesting development in the past week is that there's been a drop of about 5 million cubic meters per day of flow from Algeria to Spain, and an increase of 5 million cubic meters per day in the flow to Italy. So we've seen a bit of a shift in flows there.
So Mike, let me come to you on that one. I mean, you've mentioned in a research report recently that you kind of thought there might be some flexibility around what Spain does with LNG, Algerian flows then being redirected. Is this what we're seeing now?
Well, 5 million a day is not very much, but one of the options we talked about in the paper was that because there's lots of spare capacity on the route from Algeria to Italy, if you could increase the pipeline volumes along that route to replace any Russian gas which goes down and send less gas to Spain by pipeline, with then Algeria possibly making that up with more LNG to Spain. So, but there are obviously contractual issues to come with that. But I think with goodwill on the side of all parties, that probably could be achieved. Jack, you may want to sort of jump in here.
Yeah, and there's just one more thing to add. Mike is right that 5 million cubic meters per day is not a huge amount, but it is symbolic in the context of some disquiet, let's say, between Algeria and Spain over the issue of whether Spain is allowed to re-export any of its gas to Morocco, given that Algeria and Morocco have obviously had quite the falling out, and Morocco is currently not importing any gas from Algeria.
Okay, well, that's interesting to watch how adjustments are kind of being made already in both Northwest Europe and Southern Europe. I guess as we look forward, Mike, let me come to you. We've talked in the past, obviously, and it's been highlighted by the Poland-Bulgaria contract terminations, about this ruble payment issue. And clearly there's a lot of discussion going on in Europe between the various countries that import Russian gas about whether or not the Russian demand for this new payment mechanism contravenes sanctions or not. How do you see the situation at the moment, and what are the critical kind of timelines, if you like, we should be looking out for?
Yeah, I think I'm not sure there's much more clarity come to light on this. I mean, the EU apparently has said that if you're fine to set up a euro or dollar account at the Gazprom Bank, and if you make the payment into that and you say, well, that's my obligations all fulfilled, Gazprom, you know, you do what you want with it, then that's fine. If, however, they set up a ruble account and still have to give an instruction to that to do the exchange or make the payment, then that may not be in line with the sanctions, so you could be breaching them. But I think there are probably sort of ways around this. I mean, obviously Hungary has said, well, we're going to pay in rubles anyway. It was reported that four counterparties had paid in rubles and that 10 had set up the relevant accounts at Gazprom Bank, but that was a source close to Gazprom had said that. So who knows? But I think the key, as we'd expected, the key timing would come is sort of the third week in May, when the payments are due for the gas flows in April. In Poland and Bulgaria, it took us a little bit by surprise, but I think there's different payment dates in their contracts, obviously. So some talk about maybe they make twice monthly payments. So I think the third week in May is going to be the crunch point. And it was reported that Slovakia said they wouldn't comply with that payment mechanism. And that could be, in terms of the amount of gas Slovakia imports for its own use, it's not that much. So it's no different really to Poland and Bulgaria. But the problem is everything's come into Slovakia from Ukraine. So that could cause problems if that gas doesn't then flow onwards to where it's supposed to flow. So I think while Slovakia may not be very big on its own, it could create a lot of problems because it's a huge transit route. The third week in May, I think, is the uncertainty. I think the market has sort of calmed down after the Poland-Bulgaria curtailment. So it's sort of gone back to where price has gone back almost to where they were before. So I think the market seems to be anticipating at the moment that things will mostly be fine by the time we get to the third week in May.
Okay, I'm going to come back to you, if I may, on prices in a second. But Jack, my usual question about storage, I guess, and now about preparedness for a summer where we may not have any more Russian gas flows. Where are we with storage right now? How's the injection going and how are things looking?
So far, cautious optimism, let's say. We're at 34 BCM of stocks, so just over a third or just under a third full. That puts us up by 2.7 BCM year on year, so that's an encouraging sign. The average stocks at the end of April between 2011 and 2021 were 37 BCM, so we're only slightly down on the average for the past decade. And in fact, if you look at the last 5 years, you would say that, well, 2018 and 2021 were years when we finished the winter with storage pretty low. 2019 and 2020 were years that were very supply long and we finished with plenty in storage. So we're very much in the mix, let's say, compared to previous years. The situation isn't terribly desperate. But I think it's when you look forward to the summer, and a lot of the talk here at Flame is about how storage economics just aren't lining up at the moment. So it doesn't look very commercially justifiable to make storage injections. But having said that, I think what is happening at the moment is that storage injections are being driven very strongly by the demands of regulated storage and policy direction and policy push.
Okay, well, that's a good prompt to me to come to you, Mike, on the whole question of prices. You've mentioned that the market's stabilised a bit since the Poland-Bulgaria announcements. I'm not going to ask you for a forecast, but I mean, what's the sense of the market is calm and doesn't expect a Russian cutoff? What's it pricing at the moment, as far as you can see?
I think it was sort of round about the mid 90s, 100 euros a megawatt hour. It had gone up above that after Poland Bulgaria was curtailed, but it's sort of come back down to that sort of level. So that's if you like in dollar money, that's $30 a million BTU, roughly sort of round about that level. Obviously, NBP has been way below that because of the problems of evacuating the gas down the interconnector. And I think the market seems to be in watching mode. I mean, this is time 11:30. I haven't looked at prices this morning on May the 3rd, but I'll look at the prices later on and probably make a liar out of me. But it's in watching mode. I think it is waiting to see what happens with the ruble payment issue. But also, the May index has come down a lot from April, so the May monthly price. In April, it was well above the day ahead. Therefore, we saw, as Jack said, nominations down a little bit. Nominations have shot back up again. The monthly index is still sort of slightly above the day ahead index, but there's much less of a gap between them. And also with flows to Poland Bulgaria being curtailed, that may have prompted higher nominations on the Ukraine route as well. But So I think Mark is watching and waiting to sort of see what happens. And then depending on what happens then, would dictate the course of price over the rest of the summer. Jack, you want to add anything?
Yeah, again, just to add in another topic of conversation here at Flame is that in the present, let us say, unusual market situations, we are seeing a bit of a re-emergence, let's say, of some of the differentials between national markets just because of the tightness of the market and some infrastructure constraints limiting the ability of gas to flow from one market to another. So, you know, the differential between NBP and TTF is just one example of that. But then also, again, seeing this LNG at a substantial discount to TTF is, again, just another example of that, really. So I think that that is one of the interesting dynamics. And I think as well, it's quite phenomenal, really, how we've managed to normalize 100 euros per megawatt hour as well. You know, Mike was sounding pretty pleased, really, that some of the prices were back down from some of the spikes that we've seen since the invasion. But I think if you had told us sort of 12 to 18 months ago that this is where we would be at the end of winter, at 100 euros a megawatt hour, we'd have looked at you like you were mad.
I think you'd have thought you got the decimal point in the wrong place, basically.
Indeed. So look, we're coming to the end of our time here, and there you are at Flame. And I'm just going to, for any listener who doesn't know what Flame is a big European gas conference where 300 or 400 delegates come together to discuss sort of key topics of the day. So I'm just going to ask you both, I know it's only day one, so you probably haven't heard that much from the conference, but what are the key themes that are emerging on day one of the conference, Jack?
Well, I think firstly, the point about differentials between national markets starting to emerge in these very unusual situations and the problem of infrastructure bottlenecks, particularly as well, actually, in terms of LNG regasification capacity as well. But then that leads into a broader discussion and has done thus far of the need to underwrite capacity expansion projects and the need for European buyers to commit to buying and off-taking substantial volume, which then, to a certain extent, brings you into conflict with questions of the energy transition. So I think if I was to offer a takeaway, it's that everybody's trying to get their heads around how to reconcile dealing with this short-term situation in a way that doesn't result in stranded assets as we move further into the energy transition.
Yeah, there's quite a few US LNG suppliers on a panel I was watching asking for long-term contracts from European buyers, which I thought was an interesting take.
And with regard to that, actually, a very interesting comparison with a session earlier this morning where the question was raised that, well, Asian buyers seem to be perfectly happy to commit to long-term contracts at the present time and don't seem quite so constrained by concerns over the energy transition as some of the European buyers. And that is maybe where we're going to see going forward a key area of competition between Asia and Europe, actually, this willingness or not to commit to long-term contracts.
Okay, well, look, thanks both. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Jack, for your contributions. Enjoy the rest of the conference, and I'm sure a future podcast will reflect more on the discussions between all the European counterparties. But for now, please do go to our website and look out our recent research. Jack and Mike have been publishing regularly, so look out on our website for those papers. For now, thank you very much indeed for listening. Take care of yourselves and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts as well as all our written research on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.